Okay, so if I understand correctly, we now have about 10 or 15 minutes for questions or comments or insights from the audience. Yes. I think you need to wait to get the microphone. And then I also think, don't we need another microphone up here? Or is this movable? Or
you mic?
Oh, true.
Good show.
Okay.
Bob Wiener, Lafayette College. For the first speaker, I'm sorry, I don't have the name right in front of me, but
it's the wrong way. It's hard to know.
He's called Jim Collins. He's a Rat Pack archivist of the 17th century, both national and regional, and I think both of you would benefit from a good long discussion. And I would just like to thank Alice for the wonderful service.
Thank you.
Down here.
Can you hear me if I don't use the mic? Do I need to come up? It's good? Okay. No, I think that's it's very useful to, because one of the things I think about now, the little bit I've gotten into this, is that you find the word race everywhere, or racial, or multiracial. It's not that the word isn't there, it's the sort of official category that isn't there, and I'm still wrestling with it. But my sense is that that there's a lot of experimentation, actually, in the colonies themselves about articulating multiracial identities, whether they're political or so that, and that maybe that, you know, that there is, in some odd way, despite all the racism in the colonies, a kind of an experience of thinking through some of these, how you live together. Well, that is useful for, or to go back to now. And it's there in the 30s, I think. It's a very interesting moment, too, and also interfaith or sort of relations. My only comment is I agree with you and think it's really a very interesting place to start looking for the very reasons you gave. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your talks. Lloyd Kramer, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I want to try to put the two talks together and ask Brett, do you find that the category or identity of race is actually part of the discourse in the 16th century when people are talking about religion or economics, or commerce? When does race become part of French identity?
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously a very big question that's been approached from a lot of different angles. If you go to, like, Bill Cohen's take, you know, the French encounter with Africa, the way he treats the 16th century is an impulse to inequality. That's what he titles that very short chapter. But it's basically the French imbibing Portuguese anti-black attitudes, and then that sort of lays the groundwork for later justifications of slavery. And I disagree with that in about every possible way I could, in the sense that they're not only imbibing Portuguese ideas, right? They're producing their own. They're engaging it directly. You know, many of the key texts that were, you know, Leo Africanus, obviously published in Paris, a lot of the atlases, you know, Guillaume de Testu, and many others who had been to Africa, published both atlases and then maps, and they have a very complicated and particularistic view of sub-Saharan Africans as, you know, a wide range of people. So in the sense of, say, 18th century justifications of enslavement based on blackness, there's nothing like that in the 16th century that I've encountered. So it's this teleology that sort of tries to explain it. The other way I think that it's deficient is the sense that categories of difference obviously exist in all societies, and they existed in 16th century France, and they were mobilized at various moments for various things. But that's not really the same thing that we mean when we say race. You know, so if someone says a negative thing about an African, that doesn't mean that they then equate all Africans as being sort of biologically the same and sort of inherently tying their biology and their ancestry to a set of abilities or characteristics. Those stories really develop later, I think, in the 18th century. But even in the 18th century, just to talk about how particularistic and local these are, for instance, I have a graduate student right now working on Jean-Baptiste Labat and his writings. He was a historian of Africa as well as, obviously, a historian of the Caribbean. He produced more volumes on the history of Africa than any European in the 18th century. And he never went there. And so he's sort of looking at all of these different texts. And so she's comparing the locally produced texts to what he's writing and finding that in these contexts, people talk about Africans in fundamentally different ways. Even the same people talk about Africans in different ways depending on where they are and what they need to mobilize for their own particular interests at that moment. So, I mean, race as a thing is obviously not real, but as a category that does have real purchase in certain moments, it becomes much more real in the 18th century.
I would just add that we have one word, race, for describing so many things. It just, that's the challenge in many in many ways to work through the vocabulary or what it is even we're talking about. But that's an interesting challenge for us.
Any other? Whoa. Okay. Oh, here. Mount. Yeah, I think we're...
So I guess I have a question for Alice, primarily in two parts. One is, I was intrigued by your outlining the lack of engagement, or refusal to engage with race on Vichy. I'm just wondering, to what extent is Vichy responsible for that, as opposed to a pre-existing French Republican culture dating back to the Revolution that defines the nation in a certain way. So that's one part. And then I guess the other part is, what about religion versus race? I mean, thinking about people in religious terms is also a part of the kind of multicultural problem in France today. And where does that come from? I mean, is that also a post-World War II thing? Or does it go back to the French Revolution, perhaps even before the French Revolution?
Well, I love the point about religion, and I don't know how we disentangle religion and race. So I don't have a good answer for you. Maybe other people in the room would like to join that. But I think we are asking that increasingly, and I don't know. I'm not entirely comfortable having worked in the 20s and 30s to go from, you know, 1789 to Vichy. I mean, there's a whole much that happened in between too, and I imagine there, you know, there are cycles in these sort of using or not using these categories, and that we just have to look and try and figure out if we can. It is too easy to lay, you know, to put everything on Vichy, and I think it was the more I look at the post-war period, the more I realize how little has changed from the 30s and some of the language. So we have to stop, and so thank you for reminding me of that.
Okay, well, we have run out of time, but please join me in thanking our speakers for two awesome.